Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Happy Friday. This is Renee. You're back at Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm so glad you joined me tonight. I have a few things I want to talk to you about tonight. We're going to do a summary at the end of the evening of everything we talked about this week, because a lot of the things we talked about this week have generated quite a few messages on Facebook and some phone calls. So first, let me say that obviously we've talked a lot about bullying, and we've talked a lot about what happens to the young people that have been bullied through the years and the different ramifications that have been caused in their lives because of the bullying. Now, we realize that everybody gets bullied. We've talked about that many, many times. But probably one of the worst forms of bullying is when somebody picks on someone else because of their problems, whether it's because they are afflicted with something. Perhaps in the story I'm going to read you, cerebral palsy could be one of the reasons. Perhaps polio, perhaps muscular dystrophy. We like to think we live in a world where that instills compassion. However, I think we're all old enough and wise enough to know that that's not always true. And then, of course, there's the things that aren't so obvious at face value, and that is some of the learning disabilities that we see in our life today. I think a lot of the things that we have today have been brought on by us. I think our world can be incredibly toxic for the human body. And I've learned a lot about that in the last 10 to 12 years. And I'm very aware of people who live in moldy houses, of people who work with pesticides. I could go on and on. I don't want to talk about that tonight, so we're not going to. But sometimes those toxins leave one of our children, maybe more than one of them, with problems. So tonight we're going to talk about somebody who's become very near and dear to me, and he struggles with his speech pattern is not real sure. He expresses himself amazingly. However, he struggles with written, because his spelling is not great, which is true of probably 70% of us. And a lot of the words that he does spell, he just sounds them out, and which, of course, is the perfect thing. He's written me something that has me thinking about so many things all at one time that I'm going to pick through it and read you excerpts from it. And he is waiting to speak if we have questions for him when I'm done reading this. Now, he was on the show one night, and he was adopted at birth at a place called The Cradle. And he has a sister who was adopted at birth as well, who has cerebral palsy. Now, there are things that he shares with me in this letter that are about things that he thought he knew about and then found out later that he didn't, that his sister knew about them. And what I've picked up on and what you'll hear in some of these sentences is the fact that they protected each other, which is a beautiful story in itself. But as a kid, other kids bullied him because of the way he talks and speaks. And he actually would have teachers yell at him and tell him to stop, like he was doing it on purpose. And he said that they would become friends because they lived in a small town and people would actually come over and spend time with them. Sorry, I'm still coughing a little bit. And it got to the point where he realized he was understanding that people would make fun of his sister. And so he tried to protect her, and apparently she tried to protect him. He doesn't talk about his family life a whole lot, but he does talk about the kids in the neighborhood and the kids that he hung around with. And a lot of them, I think he's still friends with. A few of them, he's not. But he definitely put up with his share of bullying. But what I see here, and this could be because now we have an adult reflecting on things that happen, I think in a lot of cases he's left out the kids because the ones that hurt him the most and stayed with him were teachers. One was a special education teacher. And he went to a special school, and Jan, that's his sister, went to a special school. And they both got the help that they needed. It seems as though they had really wonderful parents, and they have a big family. So they, you know, they stuck together for a lot of things. But his sister couldn't walk, and that, of course, made things even harder for her. He gets around just fine, although through his lifetime there's been times when he's been paralyzed and actually been ridiculed for that and been told that he couldn't do therapy and couldn't do this and couldn't do that, and he had to stay at his job. Today, I think our rights, that's one thing that we have improved a little bit, and that's the rights of workers' compensation and when you get hurt on the job and being able to find a place for you if you get hurt on the job. I don't think any of those things happened for this young man. I think he always kept trying, and he has amazing fortitude and stamina and tenacity because he just keeps on going. And he talks about a little boy in a wheelchair and how he took care of him at Six Flags when he went as a helper with his sister's group. And he has lots of good memories like that. But then there's times when people would just get angry with him, and I guess maybe frustrated with him, and instead of trying to help him, they more or less just wanted him to leave them alone. And he talks about how much Facebook has changed his life, which I think is beautiful, because it's opened their world, especially his sister's, who's pretty much incapacitated. So it's opened their world to friends that they knew way back, and they've friended each other again. And he said that he got in a lot of trouble with physical therapy when he got old enough to have jobs. He's also worked as a volunteer helping basketball teams and football teams and things like that, and helping kids, be at school on time. And in one scenario, there was a young man who kept skipping class, and it was his job to make sure that he came to school. And he'd call, and nobody would answer the phone, and, you know, and this happened to everybody, but if it happened to him, then he was ridiculed for not being able to get this young man in school. So it sounds like people gave him more than the regular, responsibilities, because they wanted to push him to the limit. They wanted to push him to see if he could really do the things that he said he could do. And it sounds to me that he did, that he made it through, and even with their ridiculing and their inability to see the fact that he was such a fighter. But he's still doing wonderful things. He takes pictures. And his pictures are beautiful. He gets very involved with those, and he's done wedding pictures for family and things like that. So his life has been very difficult, to say the least, but also very interesting because of his tenacity and the fact that he realizes that he has something to offer. And despite how that often means a wall of criticism and a wall of, you know, what are you doing here? You know, you can't do this job. You don't spell good enough. Well, I got to tell you something. I've been a boss for a lot of years. I can count on one hand how many people would write me notes and all the words were spelled right. So I feel like that was just another opportunity to harass him and bully him. So again, he jumped to the top of the amazing group of people that stood up for my grandson, and that's how I met this young man. And now we talk on Facebook quite a bit, and he's offered me a lot of information for this show and a lot of information for what happens to the young people. And I think that what he wrote me is very, very truthful and very, the memories, like I say, I think could be a lot worse, but I think he grows past them, which is a big lesson for all of us to learn. Because even though he knows that he ran into some of these teachers, and like I said, the teachers are the ones that appear every time I talk to him or reading this, the teachers hurt him more than the other kids did, which of course doesn't surprise me. But my guess is that a lot of this stuff he just considered that they were kids. And that they, you know, they just couldn't hurt him as bad as the people he depended on, which were the grown-ups. And very sadly, we're seeing a lot of that. And we mentioned that a lot of times this week about how kids will say, I went and I told somebody and nobody listened. So I do think that that's a problem. And I do think that that's something that we have to we have to talk about. I'm going to bring John in and ask him a few questions. I don't want to embarrass him, and I do want him, though, to be able to answer some of the questions. Hi, John. It's Renee. How are you tonight?
I'm doing okay here.
That's good. That's good. That's good. I loved what you wrote for me, and like I said, I've sat here tonight, and I've probably read it four times. And did you hear everything I just said about how most of the things that really stayed with you concern adults?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's your way, because other things that I've picked up about you now that I'm getting to know you is you love children.
Yes,
and I think it's really, really hard for you to say anything bad about kids. And I think you've forgiven most of them, which is why, of course, you're able to move on and be the productive person that you are today, which is a major, major lesson for all the kids out there. Because if they're going through something and they think it's never going to end, and I'm sorry, and that it'll never get any better, you're living proof that it does. Because nothing really, really changed a whole lot for you. You still struggle with some of your words. You still struggle with your spelling. But you're an adult now. You are a you produce beautiful pictures, and you're a part of society. And you spend a lot of your time helping kids.
Yes, I do. I mean, mm-hmm. I bring most after school and after work, I spent all my time helping youth sports and kids. And
mm-hmm.
it was, I would get home about 4, then 4:30, I'm on my way to a game or practice or something. And I won't
mm-hmm.
get home to about 10 p.m. that night, and then it's the same thing the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the kids really look forward for me to be there. And one of them, several of them, ask father, cousin, uncle, to be their siblings' coach for other sports, and to be there for their other sports that they play. And if it wasn't for the youth in sports, I don't know where I would have been. I mean, that had a big influence in my life with the coaches and the youth.
Well, you know, John, let me say this. Every one of us need a purpose. You know, every person that is set upon this earth needs a purpose. And the only time you don't is when you are a baby. But even by the time you're toddling around and looking for something to do with your time and your idle, cute little hands and all the things that you can get into, you're looking for a purpose. So that's what you've done. You've replaced all the bad stuff and a lot of the bad memories that hurt you when you were a young man and turned them around and have come up with a purpose for your life and for why you're here. It's beautiful.
You're totally right. And it's all the bad stuff you have to turn into positive. And
that's right.
And one of the things, the players I had, the coaches were the best. I mean, they treat everyone like we were one family. And everyone was treated equally. And even the coaches were superb. They knew what I could do, what I can't do with my learning disability. And they knew exactly, and they meant a lot. And even when my grandfather passed away, this was in 2003. My grandfather was 88 years old, and we had a memorial service. And I probably had maybe 10 to 12 coaches from different sports came to the wake, and also probably 3 to 4 or 5 teams came.
Wow.
That's
a very impressive showing. Very impressive showing. And that was for you.
Yes, and it meant a lot. And even I was involved with baseball, and the team I was with was the mayor of our town was head coach. We had the police chief was assistant coach. And even their people came to the surface, and I will always remember that. And even the funeral home director said we never had a crowd of people for an 88-year-old person. My father being there. I mean, the whole parking lot was filled, and down the streets were filled with cars, and a lot of people came for me from the sports part.
Wow, that's really beautiful, and that says a lot about who you've become, a lot about who you've become. And let me ask you something. You mentioned something to me the first night that we talked on the radio show about still being on occasion in touch with somebody that was your coach and then became your boss. Do you still see that man?
He was a coach and then a co-worker.
Co-worker.
He just retired last year, and I saw him over the summer in a store. He lives He was about half an hour away from where I live, and I saw him in the store at Utah. Sometimes I will get a Christmas card from him and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
But he, Mr. Graham is his name, and he probably, if I wasn't in school and stayed in the regular classroom, I probably would have improved some of my English skills.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to school, everyone was saying that Mr. Graham is the hardest teacher and everything. And that was Mr. Graham's first year teaching.
And I see. So he was a beginner as well.
Yes. And mm-hmm. I've been in his classroom several times as a coach with him, and then I also was involved with some of his cleanest projects, and so several of his students still saw me in the stores and everything. Hello, Coach John, because the teacher, Mr. Grimm, you can tell them this is Coach John, so.
That's nice. Yeah. And that speaks volumes about who you've become. You know, and kids, they have like a built-in sensor for people that they know care about them. You know, I know that firsthand, that a kid knows if the person that's with them really cares about them or not. They always know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm still coughing so bad.
Hope you're feeling better. And yes, it does. One of the things this past weekend, my father and I, my father from the club, had a flea market. So we, my dad had a 10-foot table, and so we were selling some of our fishing gear.
Uh-huh.
And of course, two boys, one of them just turned 9 on Saturday, and that's the day we had our fishing flea market
mm-hmm.
in high school, and he had an older brother, I think 10, and they were sitting at the other table right across from our booth, and I ended up talking to them, and I ended up giving them a fishing rod and two fishing rods, some reels. And the part of the pool. And
you set him right up.
Yeah, I also did 4 extra reels as spare parts and a whole bunch of doors, carrying twin doors and all that. And I said, this is for you, and enjoy fishing and all this. And the kids were just amazed and says thank you to me several times, even the parents and the grandparents. And seeing their expression on their faces was worth doing. And I know it meant a lot to them. And my father was in the distance, and he told his friend, he said to his friend, watch John, he's probably going to give him a reel and a pole and some stuff.
Yeah, your dad knows how you are. Uh-huh.
Yes.
That's nice. Well, and like I said, you know, you're changing people's lives like that, John. You know, this world is unkind to a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. And when somebody meets somebody who really cares about other people and who genuinely wants to do something to make a difference, it does make a difference. And a lot of people say to me, oh, what can I do? I don't have any money. And I'm like, I don't have any money either at all. But it's not about money. It's about being there and doing what you can. And let's face it, a lot of times you can do a lot more than you think you can. And you're living proof of that.
Right. And you don't need money. There's just being there and watching the game, or just being there helping them, it means a lot to them, and they look up to you, and it means a lot for you, and it also means a lot to the kids, to the parents, to the team, and everything. And even when you travel, like I've been over to Europe to visit relatives, and I would do the same thing. I mean, when I was over there, I ended up going to watching we were staying in a hotel on this park. I went down.
Oh, really?
I went down and watched what they were doing.
Wow.
What type of sport. And then we'll bring back home what they were, different ideas and everything.
That's wonderful.
I have cousins.
That's really wonderful.
Yeah. And they will show us all around when we're over there. And you get to see the different lifestyle there to here. And like I was, when we were young, I got to go to Eastern Inn. And that was a experience.
Wow, you've been all over, John.
Yes.
Lucky you.
And
you have a lot of that is why you're able to teach these kids a lot of different things, and a lot of the reason is because you've seen what you've seen. That helps you. I don't know, it kind of like widens your horizons so that you are better about kids that are looking for a little bit of help, you know?
Right. And this is like when I went to, growing up, we used to go to the West Coast to my mom's side of the family. And at day after Christmas, we used to fly out, and then we were there for 2 weeks. And so a week down in San Diego area, and then the other week up in Los Angeles area. And when we're in the San Diego area, we used to go into Mexico, to Ensenada, Mexico, which is now one of the cruise ports for going to Hawaii. And then we used to go to Tijuana. And the next time I was in Tijuana, I have two cousins that live with the aunt. The father got killed in the car accident, and the mother, medical happened with the mother, and the mother just passed away about 2 years ago. And both of them are grown and are married, and before they were... this was probably 1994. I took them to California. I paid for everything. I'm out to California to visit my relatives. And then my uncle Joe and I and my two cousins, we went to Tijuana and just walked around from downtown Tijuana back to the United States. We walked, and it was about a couple miles, and we went through some bad neighborhoods and some good neighborhoods, and then when we got to the border, I remember Mom was saying, if you hear any gunshots hit the floor, and I remember I was the first one going through customs, and they said, they look at my license and they said, you're from Illinois? I said, yeah. And they asked me a question about where I live and everything.
Yeah.
they said, all right, you go ahead. But the time before that, I was with my parents and my cousins and everything, and we were in a mobile home camper, and this one area is where the river, where the storm, the river down rain that goes into this type reservoir, cement thing.
Right.
And so that time, that reservoir was filled with cardboard homes of people living, families. And it was over 1,000-some people. And I always remember that. I saw how they lived and what how lucky we are here. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even those kind of travels. Well, again, I think a lot of this is because you are, like I said tonight, you pay attention to what's going on around you. You're aware of people's feelings and aware of people's surroundings, and it attunes you to what's going on in the world. So the little things that seemed so big when you were a young man have gotten smaller and smaller, and you've become the man that you are. I'm going to let you go tonight because I got a call from somebody who's in a really, really big struggle. If you'd like to stay on the line, maybe you'll have something to say. I will probably mute you because this is going to be very sensitive. This is about a 17-year-old who's in big trouble in Carolina. I've asked her to call me and talk to me so that maybe, because I'm not sure what we can do to help, but maybe somebody will hear and somebody will know, and that includes you too. Okay, John, how does that sound?
Yeah.
So, but first I want to thank you again for sharing so much of your life and showing all the young people out there today that you can absolutely positively overcome those things that seem like huge mountains when you're young. And as time goes by, they get smaller and smaller and smaller, and pretty soon you're walking over all of them, right?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to set the groundwork for the next call, and I will talk with you soon. Thank you so much, dear.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if I can stop coughing long enough, I am expecting a call from another place, and I'm going to lay some groundwork. We have a 17-year-old that is incarcerated in, I believe it's South Carolina. And she really, really, really could use some help. And they're going to let her go on the, I think it's, I'm looking back through my notes, on the 20th. And if they do, she can't have the family that she was with before. She has to go someplace else. So I'm hoping that there will be people that will have some ideas. I have suggested to the young lady trying to help her that she calls 211. And I also am going to get on their website and see what I can find out. Because it appears as though she is one of the young women that we talked about earlier this week, and that is a cutter. She's hurt herself on many occasions and obviously is in a really, really, really hurt and bad place, a very deep, dark place. So the thought of having her be out there on her own is awful. I suggested a church and was told that that was probably not in the cards. So if any of you out there are aware of any place or would like to call in and offer any kind of help, it's North Carolina, and she goes back to court on the 20th, and they'll probably let her leave, and she really has no place to go. Now, what that will mean is probably the system will step in and put her in another foster home, which is okay for right now, but obviously is not the answer because it didn't help this time and didn't keep her out of trouble. And it sounds like she really needs some major professional help. And I'm hoping there's somebody out there that knows what that is and can offer some suggestions. I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows anybody in North Carolina. I'm not asking for somebody to give her a bedroom. I'm not asking for anybody to step up to the plate like that. I'm asking for input about places to go. As I said, 211 I know helps here, and it's a big deal here. So if somebody out there has any ideas, please call me and let me know what you think, and we'll work on this. No one has called me yet, but I am going to leave the lines open, and I'm going to touch base with all of you on what we talked about this week. And that is, of course, number one, one of my very favorite stories that we've done. It's not my favorite because of the struggle that's going on with it, but it's my favorite because of the young lady, Bailey, who lives here in Florida, northern Florida. And she's 14 years old, and she is a homosexual, and she has tried to establish a gay and straight alliance. And the school is trying to stop her, and the school board is trying to stop her because they think that they don't need any more after-school activities, and they most certainly do not need this one, that they think that she's looking for trouble. Now, for me, the only way she'd be looking for trouble is if, that's what they make it into. But if alliance does not mean trouble. I ask my youngest grandchildren, well, not AJ, but the younger ones, what does alliance mean? And they said, an understanding and have friendship. And I said, that's right. That is exactly right. So if she can do this, this will start, I hope, a snowball reaction all over, helping getting some of these kids talking about their differences and understanding how to get along and accept and embrace the differences of others. There is a petition on my Facebook page that you can sign. There is more information on that on my Facebook page, but you could also just look her up. Her story is wonderful, and she's adorable, and I'm very proud of her, even though I don't know her. Now, the other thing we talked about this week is something that's very close to my heart, which is manipulation of the system. A little bit more hardcore, not so touchy-feely kind of a subject, but a very sensitive subject nonetheless. It appears as though our system has become one of such gray areas because nothing changes with the times more than anything. Some of the old laws and instructions and guidelines and everything that were set up so many years ago are still often being used today, and we all know that we are, I'm 64, nothing is the same as it was 20 years ago. So to think about some of the laws that are still being used in the court system today and some of the arguments and some of the summations that are made every day and some of the rights of the people making these calls and some of the codes and the instructions that go to jurists, that go to the state attorneys, to the prosecuting attorneys, to the people that are in the courtroom. It's gotten very, very gray. And we touched base on what is happening with my grandson's case, which should be, as far as my family is concerned and most of my friends, over and done with. And the boys should be serving their penance and hopefully coming out someday and become citizens and participate in the world in a way that never puts them back in there again. However, because there's all these loopholes and all these nooks and crannies, maybe we should call our court systems an English muffin or something, because you never know where you're going to get to. And there are really lots of loopholes. So we did discuss that, and we talked about that at length, and I feel very strongly about it, and so do some other people who listen to the show. Then the stories that we talked about last night, which of course brought me in the phone call that I got tonight, and that has to do with the way kids get past bullying and how they deal with bullying and what is going on in their lives with bullying. So one of the things that broke my heart and that I found to be just so unbelievable is that a lot of these kids cut themselves and hurt themselves really badly. And we did talk about the fact that they do that to kill the pain. And that's what this young woman that I'm talking about in North Carolina, those are one of the things that she does to try to end the misery that she feels she's immersed in. I don't know what she did wrong or any of the other particulars, but the parents apparently signed her away and don't want anything to do with her and think she's, you know, like an apple that got too spoiled in the refrigerator or something. I don't know. I don't get it. As a mom and a grandma and a friend and a woman, I don't get how anybody can throw away their child, but they must have reasons. So in the meantime, she's still here, and we need to step up and help her. But this way of dulling the pain that you feel because you feel like you do not belong here or there or anywhere is really awful. And one of the stories that I quoted last night, a young woman wrote in her story that she had even written fat across her torso. And because it became such commonplace, she didn't really look at herself anymore. Until one day she was stepping out of the shower and just caught herself in the mirror, something that she didn't, as a rule, do, and saw all those scars and cuts and this red writing on her torso that said fat. And she said, all of a sudden I realized, you know, what was I doing? And what did that prove? And why was I doing it? And now for 2 years, she has not cut herself or hurt herself. So there is light at the end of the tunnel in a lot of these stories that I read. So I do think that there's some hope for this young woman that we're talking about. I'm disappointed that these people have not called me back, but something must have happened because they're very upset about it. So I know they definitely wanted to be there for this young woman. So I do think that there's something that can be done when we have a child that's 17 and she's just in a jail. I don't know what that means. And again, I didn't ask what she did to get into the jail or anything, but there has to be some safe places where these kids can get their bearings and realize that they're worth more than what other people have made them believe they are. And what a wonderful night to hear John's story and his travels all over the world and how many different places he's touched people and reached his hand out to young people who didn't know anything about him or know anything of him or care whether or not he spoke beautifully or spelled beautifully and cared about him and vice versa. So when you hear things like that, it makes you understand that anything, absolutely anything, is possible. And forgiveness is a big thing. And as I mentioned in John's, I kept reading his letter tonight, and I thought to myself, you know, he talks very little about the kids. And in other conversations, he's mentioned things to me, and he only says them once, which lead me to believe that they're not what stayed with him. He does, however, mention some of the teachers, and he does mention some of the peers in workplaces and stuff like that. And these are grown-ups. The grown-ups he doesn't forgive as easily. And I think we can all understand that. The grown-ups in our lives are supposed to be the ones that comfort us, not the ones that inflict the discomfort. And again, I hope that there's lots of things going on out there today and in the days to come that are going to make a difference so that we don't have any kids wandering around thinking that nobody cares. Because I care, and I know a lot of other people that care. And again, I'm not asking anybody to put up, you know, their guest bedroom. I wouldn't ask anybody to do that. But I know that there's a lot of wonderful places out there today. We all just need to know where they are. When I get off the phone tonight, I will be on the internet looking for housing through 211 and find out what I can find out. And if anybody else has any other input in regard to that, I would love, love, love to hear it. And you can always Facebook me, or you can always email me at Reenie, R-E-E-N-I-E dot Brewer, B-R-E-W-E-R, 91 at gmail.com. And I do have an email for Heart to Heart, but it's still not working right, so I'm not going to hand it out because I'm afraid you won't reach me. But that's my normal, gets me on my phone, gets me wherever I am, email. So if you have an idea or you know of something we can do to help this young woman, please let me know. And if you have any more stories like John's, people who have lived through things that weren't very nice and that weren't very pleasant. Some of the things John said about his sister in his letter really moved me. And for those of you who know anything about cerebral palsy, they struggle with their gag reflex and things like that. And she struggles with that, but she handles it. And he said, you know, if she sits in a restaurant and she's afraid things aren't going to be all right, we just turn her back to everybody and we just deal with everything that comes our way. And I said, you know, they must be an incredibly strong family. I would love to meet John's parents someday because they sound like they must be really, really wonderful people. So I'm going to see if John wants to come back in because I'm losing my voice. And I see Shelley has joined us, but I'm not going to make her talk because her voice sounds worse than mine. And we'll see if anybody else ends up calling in. Hi, John. Nobody called me, but you heard what I said, what's going on, right?
Yes, I heard.
So do you have any ideas? Do you know anything about any places that would offer this young woman some help?
Offhand, I don't. I know let's see, kind of like a relative of ours, and he was, I think, 16 when, and something, his father was lived out of state, single parent, and the mother was raising him, and somehow something happened, and he was in kind of like in a jail type thing, and then he was going to be getting out at age 17,
mm-hmm.
and no one in the family wanted him, and
yeah.
his dad's brother from Texas came and took him and made sure that he will finish high school, and what we just got a word just a couple of weeks ago, he did graduate at high school, that he wants my sister and my niece to be down there for his graduation in June.
Well, that's wonderful.
And
that's wonderful.
He had a very hard struggle life and been in trouble and like that. And
mm-hmm.
even his father, who I am known, at age 11, he was living on the streets. And his
wow.
So his family wasn't there. Didn't know how to read or write, nothing. Until he met my family and met my sister, and we kind of taught him how to read and write and everything.
Wow. Well, you guys are very special people, that's for sure. And but maybe through all the people that you've met and all the people you know, if you put something out there or put something on your Facebook page or anything, maybe we can learn some more about some of the different states and what they have to offer. But I will, as I said, I will research tonight and find out what I can find out. I mean, being online is like a wealth of information, and many times you can find out things that you had no idea even existed. So I will do that tonight and find out what I can. And maybe we can help before the 20th. That would be my goal.
Right.
And go ahead, Judy.
I would do the same. I know.
Okay.
I have a couple cousins out in North Carolina. One of them works for a law office, and maybe I could contact my cousins and see if her lawyers might know of a way of helping.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I mean, anything like that we can do. And like I said, I'm not going to ask anybody to go out on a limb for somebody, you know, they don't know, and for somebody who's been in this much trouble, and there has to be some reason why her parents did what they did. I mean, let's hope that they're just not monsters. She, you know, and sometimes, you know, by the time you're 17, if something went wrong really early on, you don't know what could be going on with her. But I certainly think she deserves, if somebody called me about her, somebody has some feelings about her not being, you know, evil through and through and wants to help her. So that's good enough for me to feel like there's something that we should try to do. Don't you think?
Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, and again, there should be no such thing as a throwaway child ever. And I know living here in South Florida, in my home, there have been many, many kids that have lived in my home. And just because mom and dad didn't know what to do with them. And I'm not sure that I made any big difference in their lives, but they had a bed to sleep in and they could grab a pork chop off the griddle if they were there. So it was what it was. And I think that most of them are now, you know, participating in this life and doing everything that they need to be doing. So they weren't supposed to not have some help. They weren't supposed to be thrown away like they were, you know, yesterday's
right.
sour milk. So I think anytime we can do something like this that makes a difference in a kid's life, I think is a plus. So one other quick thing, because we're going to start rolling down here, and yours truly can't cough anymore tonight. I am going to start researching and seeing how I can organize an event against bullying here in South Florida, and I'd like to do it maybe by the time school is out in the summer, or maybe even closer to May, sometime in May. So anybody have any ideas about events like that and would like to call me and say, oh my gosh, I have this wonderful idea, I am all ears, I would love to hear what it is. And I would like to say that when I talk about bullying, I'm talking about bullying of every kind. Bullying for just the sake of pushing somebody down in first grade, all the way up to backstabbing somebody in corporate America. Bullying is not acceptable. So we have to fight against it, obviously, because it's not going away on its own. And maybe an event that would bring everybody together and let everybody see that if we care about each other, then it's just nicer. It's just nicer. I mean, every time you turn on the TV here lately, you're seeing these Kanga dancing and all this other kind of stuff where everybody does it as a group and all works together. And I think, God, it's that easy, everybody. It's that easy. And yet we still struggle with it. We still struggle with it. Shelly wants to say something, I guess. Let me see what she wants. Are you sure you can talk without coughing? Because I've done enough coughing for both of us.
No, I've been coughing during the entire show. That's what took me so long to call in. Good grief. I'm surprised I have a lung still in my chest. Anyway, what I would like you to do is, I love what you just said. I'd like you to send me an email about
okay.
the event.
Okay.
So when this first happened, Mikey, I'm getting a little feedback. I don't think it's my phone, though. Can you hear that?
I think it's John's. John, are you close to the, is your volume up on your computer, honey?
No.
No? Okay, we're good.
Okay. Anyway, but when things first happened with Mikey several years ago, I had wanted to do some sort of a fundraiser, and then things happened. We never got it off the ground. But when I worked at Grumman, they held a lot of very well organized, with all kinds of information booths, and then booths where people would come and donate money and that kind of stuff. And so I have a lot of information on how to organize these, how to get the sponsors and things like that. So if you can send me an email, I'll send you an outline, and then we can start contacting some appropriate parties to start organizing them.
That sounds wonderful. That sounds wonderful. And we'll get all the feedback we can get, because I agree with you. And I remember when you were going to do that. And, of course, we both know there were some amazing events around here for Michael. And a lot of people, you know, rallied together and everything. I would really like a place where, if need be, some of the smaller organizations could even make a little bit of money on their own. I don't care if people, you know, like if they want to come and sell their goods or cook food or whatever they'd like to do. But the theme for the whole day would be, you know, being kind to each other.
Right.
And doing something. I tried to think to myself last night of a new thing, you know, like I tried to think of a different word for bullying. So let's all think about all these things and the other stuff that we talked about tonight. I am going to sign off because I'm about to have another coughing spasm. Thank you so much, John. I loved your letter, and I loved what you've done with your life. You are a major inspiration. And thank you, my Shelley, for tuning in, even though you can't talk without coughing like me. So I will talk to everybody Monday night. From my heart to yours, this is Renee. Good night and God bless. Good night, you guys.
Good night.